all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Matthew McGee. Matthew is a retired United States Coast Guard member, and it's a real pleasure to have somebody from the Coast Guard here on Veterans Radio. Matthew, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for having me. I look forward to this conversation, and I'm glad that I could accommodate and break the ice here, and you'll find more Coasties to come on the air with you.
We'd be glad to have them. So you served for about 14 years, if I did the math right, with the Coast Guard?
That's correct. So initially I signed up, I did 8 years. That time I was enlisted. I was at a couple different units. My first unit was in Washington, D.C. I was at headquarters, so that was kind of, eye-opening, behind the scenes, see the policies, what's involved, and, making the Coast Guard really happen, because I was fortunate enough to be in a variety of assignments there. I was in the Commandant's office working on special assignments a couple different times. I was involved in a variety of other special assignments. I worked the 1992 presidential inauguration, which was, I'll call it a fun event, that was interesting to see behind the scenes there. And then I went to Boston and did a variety of things there. I was, I went to TAD on some cutters. I did law enforcement stuff there. Really, I was fortunate in my experience with the Coast Guard that I took initiative. I didn't want to just, while primarily my function was administrative, I was personnel related, I always sought out, things that were quote-unquote real Coast Guards, law enforcement or search and rescue type things. So fortunately, I was given the levity to do some of those things.
Well, it's one of the things that I think sort of interesting about the Coast Guard is, and I want to talk about it some, but let me set this up, which is pointing out to our listeners that the Coast Guard is the principal federal agency responsible for maritime safety, security, and environmental stewardship in U.S. ports and waterways. It is one of the five armed services of the United States, although it's headquartered in time of peace in the Department of Homeland Security now. But it has 56,000 members. It operates 243 cutters, 201 fixed wing and rotary aircraft, and over 1,600 boats. So it's a big service. Bigger than many navies, I would tell you, in the world. So it's sort of interesting that you got a chance to see the back end of the personnel and budgeting side of how do you keep this force moving forward across all those different assignments. Very interesting.
Yeah, indeed. And then as I progressed along, I left active service with the opportunity to, join the city police department because, quite frankly, I'd gotten a little, bored, if you will, sitting behind a desk. So, I was searching out, new adventures, if you will, and, joining the police department was another way for me to continue to serve, community. I'm taken to, community service, public servant, if you will. But probably the most life-changing thing is when I did get recalled after 9/11, because I kind of transformed into, a whole other side of the Coast Guard, operational, and that is after we became Homeland Security, as a result of the reorg from the events of 9/11. So then I had all new experiences, which was truly life-changing for me.
Well, let's let me back up a little bit. And why did you join the Coast Guard?
So quite frankly, I visited my brother one time, and he was in the Coast Guard. And I'm like, man, this seems like, I engaged a lot of people. I was at a point in my life, I was going to community college, but I was just going, I was working, I think I was in the hospitality industry at that time, so I was working tons of hours, what was the reward there? And while I was going to school, I wasn't really enjoying what I was doing, so I was like, why not? I come from a military family. My dad was in the Navy in World War II. My brother, who ended up retiring from the Coast Guard, initially did 4 years in the Army. My other brother was in the Marine Corps for over 8 years. So, I don't know if it was just a natural calling or what, but it just seemed like the right thing to do.
And we hear that a lot from veterans, that the family relationship draws them into service of the country. And we also hear a lot of times that, hey, I wasn't doing much in school and I needed to get my stuff together. Now, I should point out, listeners, that Matt McGee here went on to pick up his Bachelor's of Science in History and a Master's degree, ultimately, in public administration. So you kind of worked that school thing out, didn't you?
I did, and again, I will, I will point to the Coast Guard, after post 9/11, after I got recalled and was doing some other things, like I said, everything just kind of clicked, and stuff just happened, and unfortunately, if you will, I was retired because of an injury that initially was sustained on the police department, but when I got recalled and stuff happened. I was fortunate enough that the VA took care of me and they sent me back to school and I utilized those benefits to the fullest. And, I told myself I would make the best of this. I still have all my arms and legs and stuff like that. I do have a back injury and I have paralysis on the outside of one leg, but I count my blessings every day. I see a lot of guys and gals that come back that aren't as fortunate as myself. So I said I would, utilize those benefits to the fullest and try to do good with them. And that's being totally honest.
So, Matt, when you get recalled for Operation Iraqi Freedom, you spend time in Miami, I guess, sector of Miami. Maybe you can talk to us a little bit about the assignments during those two or three years where you were involved in maritime security issues.
So I kind of hit a whole gamut of assignments while I was there. I initially started with military outload, which the base for that was actually the port of Charleston, but the headquarters was down in District 7, which was Miami. And that was all the sorties and things like that. So those were in charge of getting all the supplies and cutters and whatnot to the Middle East. But, so I was responsible for giving daily briefings to the security force and what was going on, the numbers of, personnel and logistics-related stuff. And then after that, I was probably there only 30 days. Then they asked me if I wanted to go up to what was known as Taklit South, which is a tactical law enforcement teams. And those were law enforcement deployable units that trained to go over to the Middle East. And that is actually where I was training every day with Nathan Breckenthal. I don't know if you know the story of him, but he was killed in 2004, one of the first coast he killed since the Vietnam War. And he was offshore at an oil terminal and off the northern Persian Gulf. And he was killed in the line of duty.
And that's a good thanks for bringing that up. It's important to remember those who lost their lives in service,
right.
But it's also important for our listeners to realize that the Coast Guard not only is protecting here along the coast of the United States, but it gets sent all over the world, including time in Vietnam, as you mentioned, and over in the Persian Gulf. I think that surprised
right.
most people.
And, which it does, and I'll go back to just a point in history. If people look up Douglas Monroe and, the Guadalcanal, and that just occurred last week. I forget what the historical number, I don't know if it was 75th anniversary, but Douglas Monroe was a coastie who gave up his life to save Marines over in the, I think that's the South Pacific Guadalcanal. So, I mean, the Coast Guard has been deploying overseas and in time of war, since, at least World War II that I'm familiar with. That's the history they taught us.
Yeah, and in fact, it is the 75th anniversary of Douglas Monroe's actions at Guadalcanal. If you're interested in more on that, listeners, go to www.usgc.mil, and they've got an article up because it is the 75th anniversary. Oh. And I think there's a lot of people who just don't realize that the Coast Guard gets stationed into those kind of conflicts. So I'm glad we're talking about it.
Right. I mean, it is a small service, so this is always the selling point. Like, we have less active members than the New York City Police Department. So if you put that in perspective, you're like, wow. But like you said, we're all over the, not only the United States, but, they're in foreign territories. In fact, so after I had left, then I told you I was in a variety of locations while I was on recall. So I left TACLA, and they sent me to what's called Port Security Unit 307, which is out of St. Petersburg, and they also they were created after the USS Cole attack in Yemen, and so they were part of the deployable units that go and keep the ports of Bahrain and other locations open. So I did go to Port Security Unit 307 in St. Pete, and we were ramped up to deploy. And then for some reason, whoever the powers that be are stood us down. I got sent back to Miami to do another assignment, which I can talk about, but that was related to the Maritime Transportation Security Act in the Port of Miami. Oddly enough, the port 6 weeks later, the unit did go, so I did miss out on that deployment, which to this day I still regret, because I would really like to go on and make a difference in that way, even though I was making a difference with this new assignment. So I was willing to go wherever they needed me. So, I was
back
to the port.
And that's we're talking to Matt McGee, who retired from the U.S. Coast Guard. And Matt, that's really one of the commonalities between all veterans, which is when you raised your hand and took that pledge, you were willing to go wherever they needed you and wherever they would send you. So I think everybody has that in common.
It's true. I don't want to say just after 9/11, because it still happens today. It happens across, wars. I'm running to, Korean War veterans here. Once in a while, there's still some World War II guys left. That's a different breed, because they don't generally talk about their service. The Vietnam guys, the reason that the organization I work for now is in existence. Those guys they were drafted. That's a whole different, a whole different thing. They didn't, some guys went voluntarily, other guys didn't, but they still went, so it is a commonality that people most go willing to do whatever's asked of them.
I wanted to back up again and talk a little bit about sort of some of the diverse missions that the Coast Guard's assigned. I think we're probably all familiar with search and rescue.
Right.
Your time down in Miami, I suspect there might have been a little drug interdiction.
There was.
Can you talk about what drug interdiction is?
So a lot of the preventative type interdiction we do, when we get what's called HIV boardings, high interest vessels, when you see the register and the schedule, we will get those from intelligence, and we go out to where big cargo ships or LNGs are docked, and we'll have to go out there and board them, which in and of itself is a lot of fun. You're climbing up these 100, 200 foot slippery ladders, with law enforcement gear on, hoping just to make it up to the ladder, and then after that, then you got to search these huge, cargo containers and holds and whatnot, and so there's a variety of different tasks for boarding teams. Some check documentation, some have to, go check areas for, drugs and other contraband that aren't welcomed.
Well, and they would only send you out when the seas were calm, right?
Exactly. Yeah, there was never, every day was sunny and calm seas, and yeah, there was never safety concerns at all.
Well, that's what they told you in the recruiting office.
They did, and they said you don't ever get underway in your home, every night. So,
So there's also port safety, port security and safety issues. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Port security, again, some of the port security, like overseas, you're dealing with a whole, you know, another level. You know, you're responsible for keeping bad guys out. You know, so the Coast Guard, like I said, in the Middle East is patrolling those areas, you know, keeping, I'm drawing a blank there. Yeah, keeping the bad guys out, if you will. But, you know, stateside, they still patrol the ports. You know, there's, if you think about it, and this always strikes a chord with people. So you have these huge container ships where you have these, you know, LNGs that carry liquefied natural gas. You know, they pull up next to a bridge or anywhere in these ports. You know, that's a huge weapon. I mean, it's not like, I don't believe no one has thought about this, but same as the planes that flew into the towers, these huge, you know, container ships could do, you know, massive amounts of damage. So, you know, the Coast Guard's out there patrolling in these little, sometimes inflatable RHIs, and, you know, they're just keeping people safe.
It's really interesting when you look at what's being done across the spectrum. The Coast Guard puts out sort of on an average day, it's conducting 45 search and rescue cases. It's saving 10 lives. It's seizing about 1,000 pounds of cocaine and marijuana. It's interdicting 17 illegal migrants every day. It's conducting 24 security boardings in and around U.S. ports every day. I mean, that's just a whole lot of activity, and it's got a much longer list that I'm not going through. But it seems like you'd have to be trained in a whole variety of experiences as an enlisted man in the Coast Guard. Can you talk a little bit about the training you got?
Well, they have specialties. So my experience is kind of unique where you could, you know, I went out and sought other responsibilities. I mean, you do have a primary job, you know, if you're, yeoman and you do personnel, you don't often get to go out and become a boarding team member, you know, and do these search and rescues and board shifts. But you can take it upon yourself, and if there's an availability, you know, I was lucky enough where commands would say, yeah, sure, go ahead, get trained and do it. You know, training is specialized, like the search and rescue guys, like the, you know, the rescue swimmers and those guys that have been down to Houston that we saw a lot on the news, which was great, you know, PR for the Coast Guard, because those pilots and rescue swimmers are, you know, pretty incredible folks, because they go through some pretty arduous training that a lot of people couldn't do. I can tell you those rescue swimmers, you know, it's crazy stuff. But again, you have the opportunity, if you want to do additional trainings and get additional qualifications, you know, the Coast Guard does allow you to do that. Well, a lot of times, say, you know, I'm not going to talk bad about any other service, but say you're in the Army and you're a tanker. Well, you're going to be a tanker, you know, but again, different mission, different service, you know.
Absolutely. There's a role to be played, and it's a pretty broad role in the Coast Guard. You brought up, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the Coast Guard's role in what I might call humanitarian missions, whether it's going down to Texas for Hurricane Matthew or Florida, Key West, Puerto Rico out of Hurricane Irma and Marie. It seems like when natural disaster strikes, you call the National Guard out of the state, and then you call the Coast Guard for all the water issues.
It's true.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so actually when I was in Florida during 2005, there was actually two or three hurricanes came through. So just the preparations before that that go into play are enormous. You know, people don't realize it. You know, all these waterside facilities, you got to, you know, clear them out, make sure they're meeting all their criteria for either securing, you know, containers or their ships and cargo, or getting people out. And then when these natural disasters or incidents are coming through, well, we don't get to leave. We have to stay by, you know, stand by to respond as soon as it's, you know, safe enough to do so. So the involvement And the commitment to the folks to stay behind is incredible. Like I said, you can see firsthand from those pilots, those, especially the helicopter pilots there in Houston, you know, went far and, you know, beyond. And they were recognized, you know, accordingly, which was a nice thing to see. And then, you know, going down to, you know, Puerto Rico, there's a huge Coast Guard presence there. You know, that's going to take a long time, but, you know, again, we have to get there, you know, oftentimes we're the first line of first responders, if you will.
Actually, just today, a press release slid across my desk that the Coast Guard is sending a cutter down to St. Croix to deliver a critical prescription medication. I mean, it's that kind of flexibility of that of the service that when called on, it delivers. And I just think we don't get enough opportunity to thank the men and women of the United States Coast Guard. So I'm really glad to have a few moments to talk with you, Matthew McGee, and thank you for your 14 years of service in the Coast Guard. Before we run out of time, though, I do want to talk a little bit about your continuing service to veterans at the Veteran Outreach Center in, I believe it's Rochester, New York, if I'm correct. And,
You're correct.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So we're the oldest veteran nonprofit in the States. Started in 1973, you know, from some returning Vietnam veterans who, as you know, weren't treated all that well. So initially we started here just a place for those guys to, you know, gather and support each other. And, you know, fast forward, what is it, 44 years later, we're still in existence. You know, we provide services to veterans and their families free of charge. We don't charge anything for the services. You know, we have employment services, education and training services, you know, housing assistance, job placement. We have wellness, you know, we have counselors and therapists, you know, right here at our organization. We have a homeless shelter that has 28 beds for male veterans. And last fall, we just opened a first of its kind in the area, a female veteran house that has two-bedroom apartments that is currently, you know, occupied. So it's a great way. This has been quite rewarding. I've been here just over a little 2.5 years, and, you know, every day I get to, you know, work with veterans, mostly indirectly, but, you know, we make a difference, and we're truly sometimes saving lives here. You know, we got guys coming in down the street to our shelter that, you know, have addictions, and we're trying to help them.
Well, it's really important work that the Veteran Outreach Center, Inc. of Rochester, New York, is doing. Matt, if there are people who want to know more about the Veteran Outreach Center, is there a website that they can go to?
There is. It's www.vocroc.org.
I want to thank you, Matt McGee, for your time in the United States Coast Guard, for your time and work at the Veteran Outreach Center, and for spending a little time with us here today on Veterans Radio. And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.